Namastoma Vinvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Vedadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
The nectar devotion is not presented to condemn any way of materialistic life, but the attempt is to give information to religionists, philosophers, and people in general how to love Krishna. One may live without material discomfiture, but at the same time, he should learn the art of loving Krishna. At the present moment, we are inventing so many ways to utilize our propensity to love, but factually, we are missing the real point, Krishna. We are watering all parts of the tree, but missing the tree's roots. We are trying to keep our body fit by all means, but we are neglecting to supply foodstuffs to the stomach. Missing Krishna means missing oneself also. Real self-realization and realization of Krishna go together simultaneously. For example, seeing oneself in the morning means seeing the sunrise also. Without seeing the sunrise, no one can see himself. Similarly, unless one has realized Krishna, there is no question of self-realization. So we're not condemning the materialistic way of life because the form of it is actually coming from the natural, human social environment. What you'll find in the spiritual world is also there. They have all the different ashrams and varnas, all the families, all the different, whatever situations there are in life. There's dharma, artha, kama, all those different aspects are there. But everything is in connection with Krishna. That's the difference. So the problem is not that somebody's living a family life, making money, doing this and that. That's not the problem. The problem is Krishna's not there. Because in the spiritual world, they have their families, they're doing their occupation, they're making their money, they're taking care of the families. But it's all about Krishna. Right? So that's not actually the problem. You understand? So, therefore, they're living within the spiritual world in its natural form, and then here in the material world, we're living in the reflected form. So, the reflected form is the same form as the original. Right? So, the form isn't the problem. The problem is that in the reflection, then we're thinking we're the controller and enjoyer, while in the original, they don't think like that. You understand? We take it, the form is the problem. No, the mentality is the problem. Does that make sense? So, therefore, it's not a problem of condemning the form. The problem is the mentality. Now, if a particular form engenders a particular mentality, then that form is basically not useful. Right? So therefore, those forms that go closely with Krishna conscious, like in the Shastra is telling so many ways to be involved in, you know, seemingly materialistic activities, but all in connection with the Lord, connection with self-realization. So if you see the Lord, then you see yourself. Right? So if we're God conscious, that means then we will be self-realized. I mean, we become self-conscious. So, I guess that's why they put it the other, conscious of the self. Does this make sense? So that means it's not the problem. The problem is Krishna is missing. That's the most essential point, is that it doesn't matter what the situation, if Krishna is missing, one has missed the point. And if Krishna is involved, then that's very nice. Does this make sense? So this doesn't mean the emphasis is therefore on this reflected lifestyle. The emphasis is on God consciousness. Because that's real, that's substance. While here, you're dealing with a reflection. It's not actually substance. It means what you think it is, it's not that. Does that make sense? You make money so you can do the different things, but the point is it's the money is Krishna. And what it can do is Krishna's potency. But that's not why we're making money. Because if we want to interact with Krishna, sit down and chant japa. Do kirtan, read Bhagavatam, associate with devotees, preach. That's direct. This other is indirect. You understand? So our own particular need or attachment for economics is our motive on the materialistic platform. Does that make sense? So then the idea is that that's the way it is in all things. So that's why the emphasis is not there. The emphasis is on the unconscious aspect. Because it's not actually what it looks to be. Does that make sense? It's not actually what it looks to be. So that is the... Yeah? So nectar devotion is teaching that. That's the important thing. So because the emphasis is on the God consciousness, that's what makes it special. Other Vedic literatures, they're making that point, but because they're going to spend most of the time describing how the materialistic activity is connected to the Lord in all its subtleties and indirect methods, that the treatise looks like it's more about the material activity. And so people get distracted. But nectar devotion doesn't work like that. It just goes directly to the God consciousness. Does that make sense? Yeah. The nectar devotion is specifically presented for persons who are now engaged in the Krishna consciousness movement. So now here then it gives further. They've said what it can do, the nectar devotion. What knowledge is there, what you can do with it. Right? It means it's knowledge about devotional service, about Krishna, how to connect your life with Krishna, how to become happy. By applying it, you will be happy. Right? And now it's saying, then, it's for religionists, philosophers, and people in general to how to love Krishna. But it said it's specifically for those within the movement. So that's the specific. Those who are practicing Krishna consciousness, then this process is for them. Others, it's not so much for. It applies to everyone else. Therefore, then the religionists, philosophers, and people in general can be engaged in devotional service. But it's specifically for those who are practicing. Right? Those who are not practicing, then we have Bhagavad Gita, Ishupanishad. I beg to offer my sincere thanks to all my friends and disciples who are helping me to push forward the Krishna consciousness movement in the Western countries. And I beg to acknowledge with thanks the contribution made by my beloved disciple, Sriman Jayananda Brahmachari. My thanks are due as well to the directors of ISKCON Press, who have taken so much care in publishing this great literature, Hare Krishna. Signed, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, April 13, 1970, ISKCON Headquarters, 3764 Watsika Avenue, Los Angeles, California. Okay. That's the preface, now the introduction. Okay. Invoking auspiciousness, Lord Sri Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes, the reservoir of all rasas, or relationships, which are called neutrality, passive adoration, servitorship, friendship, parenthood, conjugal love, comedy, compassion, fear, chivalry, ghastliness, wonder, and devastation. He is the supreme attractive form, and by his universal and transcendental attractive features, he has captivated all the gopis, headed by Tarika, Palika, Shyama, Lalita, and ultimately Srimati Radharani. Let his lordship's grace be on us so that there may not be any hindrance in the execution of this duty of writing the nectar devotion. Impelled by his divine grace, Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada. Right, so invocation then is going to, means like we see is in the preface, still it's like an invocation. It's telling more exactly why it's important to study it, what it does and everything like that. Here then in the introduction of Mangalacharan, then you can afford to be more poetic. Like that, bring out the element of rasa more. Though things will be explained, but the point is now in the invocation in your Anubandha Chatushtaya, is that then you're going to establish your deity and then that respect of that deity. And so either you can just say his name, or as here then you're explaining who he is, and his position as the Lord of Rasa, and by that then how he's attracting the minds of all these gopis, and not just any gopis, the leading gopis. But he says, headed by Taraka, Palika, Shama, Lalita, and ultimately Srimati Radharani. He's talking about the eight main gopis, like that, because out of unlimited gopis, then, you know, basically 16,108 are main. Of those, 108 are main. Of those, 8 are main, and of that, then 2, and of that, 1. Right? So then, you know, so he's showing how attractive he is. Right? So that's the whole point, nectar devotion, how to become attracted and established in devotional service. And then he's offering his obeisance to the spiritual master, and then he'll continue. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada and of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada, by whose inspiration I have been engaged in the matter of compiling this summary study of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. This is the sublime science of devotional service as propounded by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who appeared 500 years ago in West Bengal, India, to propagate the movement of Krishna consciousness. So you can see as he's going through a Mangalacharan in its normal state, but he's giving explanations because we may not know all these things. So while others will just, you know, in the Sanskrit mention the thing, so the Sanskrit, it would be read by someone who's educated. And if they're educated, they would know all these things. But since it's written in English, that means you don't necessarily know anything. You may know something, you may not know something. But, so therefore, explanation is given. And at the same time, the explanation is part of the glorification. Because if you say Lord Chaitanya, and then you say Lord Chaitanya, and then qualities about him, or Krishna and qualities about him, then it's fine. Also, you notice in the poetics, because it's written in that form, then we can get away with that, you know, basically in the closing sentence of one paragraph and the opening of the next, he can mention his spiritual master twice. Otherwise, one would think, well, it's already been mentioned, so then we can, you know, how, why. But the context is slightly different. Right? So he's saying he's impelled by, in other words, he's impelled to write this nectar devotion by his spiritual master to please Krishna. Then the next one, he's praying, offering his respectful obeisances to Srila Rupa Goswami, who is his book, and his spiritual master, that he may be qualified to write it. So it's two different things, even though it may appear. That's why the modern just taking things, sticking them together, doesn't always work. You have to see what's the point being made. Right? Language is a medium of expression of a point. Right? So that point, if that is made, great. If not, if you've just done some very nice literary expression, it's very, you know, you can appreciate it, but it didn't actually do what it's supposed to do. You know? That's the thing. Is what is it? You know, you have these sayings like, can't remember what they're from the Sanskrit. You have them in the Western also. It's like, you know, it's like a mirage. You know, it's very beautiful, or a castle in the sky, or you know, all these. Will of the Wisp, all these different things, very nice, very poetic, very well presented. But the problem is that it has no substance, no meaning. Right? So, yeah. So here is that, the point is being made. That's the most important thing. The point has to be made. Now how concisely you can make it, and how clearly and efficiently, then that actually is what makes it more poetic. Right? So that's the eloquence that one's looking for, not the grammatical perfection of literary, you know, minimalists like that. If you can do it, sound like someone like Jayadwaita Maharaj. I mean, he's the best I've seen in literary minimalist. He can turn a paragraph into a half sentence. You know what I'm saying? It's a full clause. But it's not even a long sentence, it's a few words. And it's a paragraph on its own. Like that. I mean, from dealing with, you know, Prabhupada's work in editing for the last, you know, 40 years or whatever, he's become so expert, he can say exactly what he wants in the most concise way. Like that. So that's, you know, very special. But he does say what has to be said, while others then try the same thing and they end up saying nothing like that. That's the problem. Srila Rupa Goswami begins his great book by offering his respectful obeisances unto Srila Sanatana Goswami, who is his elder brother and spiritual master, and he prays that Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu may be very pleasing to him. He further prays that by residing in that ocean of nectar, Srila Sanatana Goswami may always feel transcendental pleasure in the service of Radha and Krishna. So now, the first two paragraphs, those were Prabhupada's, other aspects of his invocation. Now he started putting in Rupa Goswami's invocation that he wrote to the book. In other words, Prabhupada is writing a summary study, so it actually, in its own way, is its own presentation. But Prabhupada is therefore, his invocation is there. Then now he's giving Rupa Goswami, so then he'll go back and forth there, an explanation of this. Like that. So he's beginning it by offering respects to his spiritual master, Srila Sanatana Goswami. Like that. One, praying that it will please him, and that he will always be absorbed in the ocean of nectar, because this is the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, so that Sanatana Goswami may also be always very absorbed in this and very happy in this. So it has a double meaning, is that he'll be pleased with the book, which is the ocean of nectar devotional service, and that same ocean he will be absorbed in. You understand the overlay? Because he's pleased with the book means he's absorbed in reading the book and pleased with what's there. But that book is the ocean of nectar devotion. So therefore, may he be absorbed in that ocean of nectar devotion. Yes?
What's the appropriate level of praying? Unless I'm mistaken, it seems like he's praying that his spiritual master will always be absorbed. Is that what you're saying?
That yes. Residing in that nexus may always feel transcendental pleasure in the service of Radha Krishna. But he's saying that residing there, so he's acknowledging he's residing there. It's well-wishing. Is it a problem that, you wish that, somebody senior to you will, be happy, be in good health, and this and that? It's just well-wishing. It's part of the relationship. You know what I'm saying? He's not giving blessing. He says he further prays. He prays that everything will be nice, because that's what Sanatana Goswami wants. So he prays that what he wants, he will be successful. You know what I'm saying? It's not from a patronizing point of view. It's not this. That's the problem, is all these nice, subtle points of relationship have been, clouded or covered, because even though people are professing the finer sensitivities of human relationship, they actually, because of the lack of faith and authority and all these other things, lack of trust, they lose actually the ability to function on these platforms. That they could be praying for the betterment of their superiors, but it's not in any way condescending or patronizing. But because they don't accept authority, therefore they're patronizing. Right? Or because they identify so much that they are authority, therefore they are. You know what I'm saying? So you don't have the social anomalies, and so then everything works very nicely for them. Does that make sense? Yes. Yes.
How to reverse that? It's like, it seems like that's what Lord McCauley did. He's kind of putting down the Vedic culture so that the Indians could be ruled. And it's really pervasive now. So yes. How do you actually change that? Because, it's a subtle thing, and there's no mentality to be little or to not.
Means, in other words, if we approach, if we see like what has been mentioned by Prabhupada, that there's not a problem in going forward with one's life, however one's going, but Krishna must be added. And that's not just a little, quick fix. It's a serious, that's where the consciousness is. In other words, performance of the occupational duties and other things, they naturally always come to the point of habit. So one is able to do them quite nicely without that much focus. Enough focus that it works. But not like the spiritual, so that's where the main focus should be. One's main absorption should be. And in that, then trying to understand it in its deeper meaning. So if that is understood, then these different things of hearing, chanting, remembering, associating with the devotees, worshiping the deities, you know, living in the holy places, worship, all these different aspects then become prominent. So then things like bhajans, like previously it was a very, if you had devotees had some time, there was a group, they sit down and do some bhajans. And then they'd read the translation, sometimes discuss, sometimes not, this, that. But these kind of things are disappearing in the name of being practical and all that. Then, you know, it's basically a Punar Musika Baba kind of situation. You go back to what you were before. Before you even had enough consciousness to understand that what you were doing was useless. And so therefore you join the movement. You know what I'm saying? Even go back to the stage before. No, it's perfectly fine. Everybody's doing it. It's great. You know, it's kind of like, you know, okay. But here we see is that Prabhupada and his father are doing, he's a cloth merchant, he's doing that. His son is educated. He's doing all the things that one would expect it would all happen. But at the same time, the emphasis was on God consciousness. That's the one thing. In other words, it's a shift in the consciousness. Then in the same process that was theirs, as you mentioned, the British would belittle the Indian culture. So the main place they did that was through education. It means they would also do it, you know, through management and everything by putting them in an inferior position and social laws. They couldn't go into certain areas or do certain things. Those are there. But that is external and people can, you know, feel bad about that. But if through education you get at their value system, change it, then that's more long-term. And so today still it's going on. So it's being handed down by the so-called educated. So then another thing to do would be to distance oneself from Indologists. You know, whether they are, you know, within the movement or outside the movement. Because they still both profess exactly the same thing. There's no difference in what they profess. Unless an individual on his own is bold enough to speak otherwise, but if they actually want, if they want to get their degree, they have to speak party line. If they want to therefore get experience and all that, they have to speak party line. If they want to get the chair, they have to speak party line. If they want tenure, they have to speak party line. And I think tenure is what, 15 years or something like that? It's some ridiculous amount of time. So that means is the devotee would have been following party line for, you know, basically, you know, what, 6, 8, 10 years before getting his degree, then having gotten his degree, he has to do it. So like 25, 30 years. Then after that, then technically he is free to speak what he likes. But whether one will be bold enough, because if you speak what you like, then you may lose your authority within the system and no one will listen to you. Like someone like Frawley and that. They speak whatever they like. Svoboda. They don't care. They're PhDs and they couldn't care less. But they're not accepted by other PhDs. And the ones that are most avid about not accepting them are our own devotee Indologists. If you quote Svoboda or Frawley, they'll immediately just, no, they're not, you know, this and that. Why? Because they're bold enough. Like that. And so, because they are working in a field that is basically more academics and less anything real, then it has some meaning. But then someone like, what was his name before? I can't remember. You get confused between the names. Or, you know, scientists and that. Dhritakarma, and then before with Sariputta, they were in their positions, and they would speak boldly because they were dealing in the area of science. They actually, because science has to be practical, therefore they got much farther, and they're respected within the community. There are individuals who don't like them, who are the previous, you know, authorities, but the newer people, they like them. So it's like we're saying through Indology we'll establish Krishna consciousness, but it's actually through science, you know, the actual, those who are supposed to be inimical, they're making better inroads than in the area that's about India and the glory of India, they're the ones that are the worst. You know, very interesting. But the point is, if you want to preach, you have to be bold. And then the problem isn't being bold. There is going to be a party. You are going to create two sides. If there's no two sides, means you're not doing anything. Because no one really supports you, no one's really against you. But if you have a group that strongly supports, you're naturally going to have a group that as strongly disagrees. That's how you know you're doing something. So therefore, we can understand that those particular members, you know, in the scientific community, they were making progress because they had serious, dissatisfied scholars. But at the same time, as they were accepted as, you know, some of the main authorities, if not the main authorities, in certain topics within the academic field by a great, a broad range of people. And the others, the Indologists, I haven't heard of one of our Indologists that anybody even cares that they exist. Nice, they get something here and there, but I haven't seen dynamic inroads that they're making a change like that. And if they're just waiting peacefully, and so once they come to the top of the pile, and then they'll make the change, great. You know, all glories. But if they don't, then it was a waste of time. Okay, they made money, maintained themselves, put their bread on the table. I won't say chapatis in that. That would be improper. You wouldn't fit in. You know? So, like that. Is that okay? Let us offer our respectful obeisances to all the great devotees and acharyas, holy teachers, who are compared to sharks in the great ocean of nectar, and who do not care for the various rivers of liberation, right? So we don't care for liberation. Why should we care for anything below liberation? You know what I'm saying? Like that. So they're already saying they're like sharks in the great oceans, because sharks are down in deep. They're not floating on the top. They're right inside, you know? And they're very comfortable, very confident. They move around as they please. No one bothers the sharks. Right? They just don't bother. You know, it only gets annoying now and again when they have to make a movie out of them or something. But other than that, they just don't get bothered. Right? Does that make sense? Right. So, that is the position. So we see the emphasis is not on the problem in the material. The emphasis is on adding Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So the problem is not academics or being an academic. Not at all. What's the difference between being an academic or being an industrialist or business person or being in service or, you know, teaching or whatever it is, doesn't matter. Is that the problem is if Krishna's not involved. Right? And Krishna involved the way the acharyas say Krishna's involved, not the way we try to adjust it to make it more palatable to others. You know what I'm saying? If going to the school, you have to learn philosophy from someone who preaches Mayavad, and they're quite convinced of that. So why can't they be convinced of Vaishnavism? You know what I'm saying? Why not? Why they're convinced that they may not accept the culture, but they're very set as impersonalists. So why can't they be set as devotees? Like that. Right? And we see Srila Prabhupada, you know, he supported the nationalist movement in India for the purpose of reestablishing the Vedic culture because it was more ideal for Krishna consciousness. Like that. You know, he wasn't into it other than that. Impersonalists are very fond of merging into the Supreme, like rivers that come down and merge into the ocean. The ocean can be compared to liberation, and the rivers to all the different paths of liberation. The impersonalists are dwelling in the river water, which eventually comes to mix with the ocean. They have no information, however, that within the ocean, as within the river, there are innumerable aquatic living entities. So they're thinking that, okay, I'm in the river is the path of liberation, and the ocean is liberation. So when I get to there, I'll be liberated, and then I'll merge into the ocean. But what they're forgetting is that they are an individual within that path. You know, so the path merges into the ocean, but the individual within the ocean, why would they by that merge into the ocean? Right? Because in the ocean, there's all kinds of living entities. So why would you one consider that merging into this ocean means you'll merge? You know what I'm saying? That's the point. Because they can't say, claim to be the river. There's someone. They can't claim, I am the path of liberation. I am an individual on the path of liberation. So that means when you get liberated, you'll still be individual. Right? It's, you know, it's what we're saying in logic, where it's just you misunderstand what you're dealing with. So you give the wrong example. You know, the river merging into the ocean, that's all right, but you aren't the river. You're a fish in that river. You know? So they misapply the whole thing. There's an illusion there. The sharks who dwell in the ocean do not care for the rivers which are gliding down into it. They're just happy in the ocean. Why do they need to go up a river, right? And that's for trout, right? Things like that. You don't bother. Sharks, ocean, trout, rivers, like that. The devotees eternally live in the ocean of devotional service, and they do not care for the rivers. In other words, those who are pure devotees always remain in the ocean of transcendental loving service to the Lord and have no business with other processes, which are compared to the rivers that only gradually come to the ocean. Right? The only, because do you ever see a straight river? No, they go all over the place. So that's the thing, they gradually get there. So nectar devotion is giving the process where you just enter the ocean. You don't bother with the river. Right? Because the river is trying to get you to the ocean. So if you enter the ocean, what do you need the river for? Does that make sense? So devotees don't have to follow the path of liberation. They follow devotional service, because that ocean is the ocean of devotion, and it includes liberation. Does that make sense? So it's a very direct process. These others are engaged in so much strangeness. Right? Srila Rupa Goswami prays to his spiritual master, Srila Sanatana Goswami, for the protection of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the ocean of the pure nectar of devotion, from the argumentative logicians who unnecessarily meddle in the science of service to the Lord. Right? So he wants to protect, because devotional service, Bhakti Devi, is a person. Right? She is the combination between the chit potency and the hladini potency. Right? When your activities, you know, in other words, chit means activity with knowledge of Krishna and devotional service, is done with the purpose of pleasing Krishna, hladini. That combination is bhakti. Right? So he's praying that she may be protected, that these logicians who don't actually know, argumentative logicians, they don't actually understand the process, that they don't try to make trouble by dissecting, you know, in an inappropriate way. It's not a matter of devotees who are discussing through the process of vichar the devotional service so that they understand it to a finer degree. You're talking about those who just like to argue and then, you know, just like to find fault. Because for every standard that there is, there's always an exception. Right? It's there in everything. So therefore, these argumentative logicians, their idea is that if they can find the exception, they disprove your rule. Right? But then does that mean that, you know, I stops before, you know, how you say, I doesn't never comes before E, you know, except after C, you know, because there is the exception of after C? So all the other things, suddenly all the spelling changes? Right? Because you found the conch shell is there, does that mean all the other bones now become pure? You know, as the cow dung is pure, does that mean now all the other stool becomes pure? No, but you'll find that this is one of the main ways of arguing. The main methods of arguing is find that exception. But there's always an exception. So the point is that there's always an exception. That means who's made this place that they can find an exception to a rule. A universal rule that always applies, then there's an exception. So only God can do that, because he is the origin of everything. So that means all contradictory elements have their origin in Him. So in connection with Him, there's no problem that all bones are impure, but conscious are pure. There's no problem. But if you don't connect it to Krishna, there's a problem. Right? So there's no difficulty. So they're always going to find that exception and try to break down the devotional service. Right? Because that's all they do. They only argue. That's their life. They're Tarkists. They're not trying to come to an actual conclusion. Or the conclusion they want to come to is not what's being presented in Nectar of Devotion. Right? Does that make sense? Yes. Is the Bhakti Devi and the Chit Potency? No, the Chit Potency is one, Paladini is another, but that combination, that's Bhakti.
Knowledge with action, right?
Means, the Chit means knowledge with, means action with proper knowledge, right? But that you're doing action with proper knowledge means you could be doing anything, you know, for yourself or, you know, like this, for your family, for anything. But you're doing it to please Krishna, then that's Ladini. Understand? That you're performing the action with proper knowledge, that's the Chit potency. The Samvit potency, right? Then when you're doing it to please Krishna, that's devotion. That's the Ladini potency. Right? So that combination of those two, that's Bhakti. Does that make sense? Then, yeah. Yeah, and then when those results of one's actions and devotion are obtained, then that naturally moves back to Sambandha, or the Sandini potency. And then Sandini potency, through that you get realization. Right? So there's more inspiration to perform devotional activities to please Krishna. And that will get further realization. You understand? So that's why the action must be combined with knowledge. Right? And then with the right attitude, then you get realization. Wrong attitude, you may get knowledge. But correct attitude, then you get realization. So, right? Because to be realized means there has to be some variety of detachment. Right? You have to be detached to get the result. Someone who's very good at an activity is while dealing with the activity, is detached from the result. They just are working on the action itself. The ultimate goal, of course, is to get the result. But they're working on it at present. They're not living in the future when I'm going to get the result, or living in the past maybe I won't get it, or like this. They're dealing with it right now. You understand? So technically they're dealing with that, and they have to be slightly detached. That's why it gives them their result. But that result will never be actually realization. You know what I'm saying? Like that. It may be a deep understanding. It means realization, meaning here, meaning understanding of God, God consciousness, self-realization. It may give one realization in the material platform, you know, beyond knowledge, because it becomes a lifestyle, it becomes a value to you. But it still had to be done from that platform of detachment, of naishkarmya. Right? Then once you get the result, then you may be attached to it. You know, so that's the materialist. Does that make sense? But the process, whether you want to be successful in material world or spiritual world, is exactly the same. So proper application of the activity, gaining the result, that result then moves back to the position of Sambandha, Prajumna. Right? And then that gives you more inspiration to move forward again. You know, so it's always ever increasing.
Chit potency and they both deny realization.
The Sandini potency gives realization. But she'll only give realization if you perform actions based on pleasing Krishna. You understand? In devotional service. In the material world, then, of course, she's going to give realization, but it's still in connection with your identity, which is not as servant of Krishna, as this body. So your value system will develop. Right? Because the Ladini is represented in the world by the mode of goodness. right? And then the action is by passion, right? So when the action is being done, but from this point of motive goodness, that you're dealing with what's going on now from a platform of detachment, then only you can get realization. Does that make sense? You know, so the formula is the same whether you're applying it materially or spiritually. The point is even you apply it materially, you will get the material results. But the problem is material results are always temporary and don't actually satisfy the living entity. So because you think it will satisfy you, the happiness that you get will be because you think you should be happy. But it's not that it's actual happiness. You know what I'm saying? You know, you're there in the house, it's all stuffy and this and that, and you're thinking, you know, let's go out, you know, fresh air, you know, walk about, this and that. You know, so you put on your coat, hat, this and that, and go out into the snow and everything like that, and walk around. You think, wow, this is great, fresh air, all this and that. But they only do that the first couple of minutes. After being out there half an hour, no one's taking deep breaths and going, this is so nice. You know, after a while, it starts getting really cold and freezing and all that. They go back inside the warm house. You understand? But his happiness was that if I get out of the house, then I'll be happy. But if it actually would make you happy, why does he have to go back into the house? Because it's not for, I've tasted outside, now let's taste back inside. No, he needs to go back into the house. Does that make sense?
Prabhupada says that happiness of materialists lies in that every other materialist thinks that they are happy. So they're happy because they know the other things they are happy. So they're superior to them.
Yeah. If anybody else wasn't happy, I have to be. Yeah, so you have to wear, like the, yeah.
And they get something like a car, and everybody thinks, wow, they're so happy. They're not really happy, but they're happy that everybody else thinks that they're happy.
Yeah, happy everybody else thinks that. Like the rich man, he thinks, everybody thinks if I'm rich, I'll be happy. But the rich men are many times miserable because they don't know who their friends are. You know, if anybody actually likes them or not, you know. So that's a problem. Yeah, so you like that everybody else thinks you're happy. Right? So that makes sense. So is that okay? We understand what's happening here? So the point is even you run that very nicely, it still has the same problem. It still has the same problem. That it's temporary and it won't actually satisfy you. Does that make sense? So that's why then you have to add Krishna to whatever you're doing. You know what I'm saying? It's the same formula. If you want to be a good materialist, it's the same formula as to be a good spiritualist. Because it's one energy. It's different aspects of the same energy, but it's one energy. You know what I'm saying? So there's slight little variations there, but it's one energy, so the formula is the same. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So, yeah. So when one understands this, then one engages in the activity to please Krishna. Because if you want to be successful material, you have to engage in the activity according to the formulas given in Shastra anyway. You have to have knowledge. You have to therefore be focused and engaged and be persistent. You have to be detached. Right? And the mood of Naishkarmya is there. Otherwise you won't get results. So if you're going to go to all that trouble, why get temporary results? Why not, that same endeavor, you get eternal results? And at the same time, is because you're doing it properly, you will also get whatever material things you're looking for. But having gotten them, they still won't give you satisfaction. But at least, you know, in your mind, you know, you got them. You know what I'm saying? So the one system will get you the material, which will be temporary. You won't be satisfied, and you'll end up with nothing eternal. The other one, you'll get the eternal. You'll also get the material, but you'll end up, you know, you'll end up dissatisfied, but you won't be frustrated. You're just satisfied that there's nothing in the material world. You understand? So your interest will turn from the material activity, but instead of turning from the particular material activity, it will turn from material activity. You understand? The problem is not attachment to a particular aspect of material nature. The problem is being attached to material nature. Because you're attached to this one today, you get rid of it, you know, another one will pop up. You know, it's like that, that Rakdasura, you know? One drop of blood falls on the ground, and then another demon springs up. You know, so the more you injure him, the more of himself springs up. You know, there's more of him. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is so to free oneself, one has to, Naish Karma will give you the results. Naish Karma will free you from the attachment. But it'll be temporary unless it is in connection with Krishna. Then you get devotional service and, you know, permanently situated in devotional service and permanently liberated from material consciousness. You understand? It's the same thing. Right? One can say, well, how can it be the same? It's just like, if I'm going to cook for Krishna or not cook for Krishna, would I use the same pots and spoons and same potatoes? Right? Does that make sense? So it's going to be the same thing.
The attitude is
what makes it spiritual. The attitude is what makes it successful. So it's all an attitude. It's not what you do. It's not the forms. Therefore, people get distracted by the forms and think, oh, we're doing this, it's not successful. So if we do that, it'll be successful. No, the point is it's the mentality is not right. That's why it's not successful. So if you change the form and don't change the mentality, you will still be unsuccessful. Does that make sense? Yes. The Haladini potency reflects here as the mode of goodness, Samvid as the mode of passion, Sandini as the mode of ignorance. Because Sandini is existence, right? Here, our existence is based on being ignorant of the fact that we're devotees, right? As soon as we know, understand we're devotees, you're not living in material life, right? You're performing spiritual life in an inferior environment. Right? And so therefore, that person, no matter what the environment, is going to think of Krishna. So therefore, at the time of death, he's transferred to the superior environment to always be absorbed in Krishna.
Does that mean that devotional service
is not... See, it's not a matter of the devotional service in the modes. We're talking about a process. To give example of it so we understand how the process is progressing, we're telling about the modes or about the Samvit Ladini potency. The point is when activity in knowledge is being performed as sacrifice, that's when you get the proper result. That cultivates the development of the process. You know what I'm saying? It's a cycle. So if it's done in that way, the cycle will become complete and it will start again. It's not done in that way, the cycle won't complete itself, it won't be repeated. You can keep trying, but it'll never get anywhere. You won't get a satisfactory result. Therefore you have to complete the process. If you complete the process, you'll get the satisfactory result. It doesn't mean you'll be satisfied with the result, because you can't be satisfied with material result. But you'll be satisfied with the result. You know what I'm saying? So it's like somebody, you know, opens a business, he wants to make lots of money for Krishna, he makes his $1 million, which was his target. So he's satisfied that he's attained his $1 million that can be used for Krishna. But it's doing that service for Krishna and using it for Krishna that is actually the important thing. The $1 million isn't, it's just the medium. He could have also washed, 1,008 pots for Krishna. You know, he could have done anything as a medium. You understand? But the process has to be completed by its being done in knowledge, you know, the combination of a sentiment and knowledge being done as sacrifice. And so ultimate sacrifice means Krishna. If you do that, then you get Krishna, you get devotional service, your material situation comes out as best as it'll come, and you're actually satisfied that there's nothing in the material world, so therefore you can move on and actually take shelter of the spiritual world. Otherwise, we always think that there's something more here. Well, if I just adjusted it this way, then maybe it would have worked, or maybe that way. We have to understand it doesn't matter how you adjust it, it's the same. You know, I had the St. Bernard, it had fleas. I get rid of it, I get a Great Dane, it has fleas. Okay, so the dogs are big, so I'll get a small dog, I get a Chihuahua, it still has fleas. You know what I'm saying? So you can go through, you know, all 300 species of dogs. But the point is to understand dogs have fleas. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Okay, so we'll end here. Yes, and then we'll continue on Thursday. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Janyatāya Gaura Premanandi.